13. They went out the side door of the hotel to the Embarcadero, and the wind hit them. The light from the hotel shone on the blackness of the gondola and made the water green. "She looks as lovely as a good horse or as a racing shell," the colonel thought. "Why have I never seen a gondola before? What hand or eye framed that darkened symmetry?" "Where should we go?" the girl asked. Her hair, in the light from the hotel door and window as she stood on the dock by the black gondola, was blowing back in the wind, so she looked like the figurehead on a ship. "The rest of it, too," the colonel thought. "Let's just ride through the park," the colonel said, "or through the bois with the top down. Let him take us out to Armenonville."
"Will we go to Paris?"
"Sure," the colonel said. "Tell him to take us for an hour where the going is easiest. I don't want to drive him into that wind."
"The tide is quite high with this wind," the girl said. "Some of our places he couldn't get under the bridges. May I tell him where to go?"
"Of course, daughter." "Stow that ice bucket aboard," the colonel said to the second waiter who had come out with them.
"The Grand Maestro said to tell you as you embarked that this bottle of wine was his present."
"Thank him properly and tell him he can't do that."
"He had better go into the wind a little first," the girl said. "Then I know how he should go."
"The Grand Maestro sent this," the second waiter said.
It was a folded old USOD blanket. Renata was talking to the gondoliere, her hair blowing. The gondoliere wore a heavy blue navy sweater, and he was bareheaded too. "Thank him," the colonel said. He slipped a bill into the second waiter's hand. The second waiter returned it.
"You already made the notation on the check.
Neither you nor I nor the Grand Maestro are starving."
"What about the moglie and the bambini?"
"I don't have that. Your medium smacked our house in Treviso."
"I'm sorry."
"You needn't be," the second waiter said. "You were a foot soldier as I was."
"Permit me to be sorry."
"Sure,"
the second waiter said.
"And what the hell difference does it make?"
"Be happy, my colonel, and be happy, my lady."
They got down into the gondola, and there was the same magic as always of the light hull and the sudden displacement that you made, and then the trimming in the dark privacy, and then the second trimming as the gondoliere started to scull, laying her partly on her side so that he would have more control.
"Now," the girl said, "we are in our home, and I love you. Please kiss me and put all love into it."
The colonel held her close with her head thrown back and kissed her until there was nothing left of the kiss but desperation. "I love you."
"Whatever that means,"
she interrupted. "I love you and I know whatever that means. The picture is lovely, but there is no word for what you are."
"Wild," she said, "or careless or unkempt?"
"No."
"The last was one of the first words I learned from my governess. It means you do not comb your hair enough. Neglectful is when you do not brush 100 strokes at night."
"I'm going to run my hand through it and make it unkempter still."
"Your hurt hand?"
"Yes."
"We're sitting on the wrong sides for that. Change over."
"Good. That is a sensible order couched in simple language and easily understood." It was fun moving over, trying not to disturb the balance of the gondola, but having to trim again carefully.
"Now," she said, "but hold me tightly with the other arm."
"You know just what you want?"
"I do indeed. Is it unmaidenly? I learned that word too from my governess."
"No," he said, "it's lovely. Pull up the blanket good and feel that wind."
"It's from the high mountains."
"Yes, and beyond there, it's from somewhere else." The colonel heard the slap of the waves, and he felt the wind come sharply, and the rough familiarity of the blanket. And then he felt the girl, cold, warm, and lovely, and with upraised breasts that his left hand coasted lightly over. Then he ran his bad hand through her hair, once, twice, and three times. And then he kissed her, and it was worse than desperation.
Please, she said from almost underneath the blanket. Let me kiss now.
No, he said. Me again. The wind was very cold and lashed their faces, but under the blanket there was no wind nor nothing, only his ruined hand that searched for the island in the great river with the high steep banks.
That's it, she said.
He kissed her then, and he searched for the island, finding it and losing it, and then finding it for good. For good and for bad, he thought, and for good and for all. My darling, he said, my well-beloved, please.
No, just hold me very tight, and hold the high ground too.
The colonel said nothing because he was assisting, or had made an act of presence, at the only mystery that he believed in except the occasional bravery of man.
Please don't move, the girl said. Then move a great amount.
The colonel, lying under the blanket in the wind, knowing it is only what man does for woman that he retains, except what he does for his fatherland or his motherland, however you get the reading, proceeded.
Please, darling, the girl said. I don't think I can stand it.
Don't think of anything. Don't think of anything at all.
I'm not. Don't think. Oh, please, let's not talk.
Is it right?
You know.
You're sure?
Oh, please not talk. Please. Yes, he thought. Please and please again.
She said nothing, and neither did he. And when the great bird had flown far out of the closed window of the gondola and was lost and gone, neither of them said anything. He held her lightly with his good arm, and the other arm held the high ground now.
Please put it where it should be, she said. Your hand.
Should we?
No. Just hold me tight and try to love me true.
I love you true, he said, and just then the gondola turned to the left quite sharply, and the wind was on his right cheek, and he said, with his old eyes catching the outline of the palace where they turned and noting it, You're in the lee now, daughter.
But it is too soon now. Don't you know how a woman feels?
No, only what you tell me.
Thank you for the you. But don't you really know?
No, I never asked, I guess.
Guess now, she said. And please wait until after we have gone under the second bridge.
Take a glass of this, the colonel said, reaching accurately and well for the champagne bucket with the ice, and uncorking the bottle the Grand Maestro had uncorked and then placed a common wine cork in. This is good for you, daughter. It is good for all the ills that all of us have, and for all sadness and indecision.
I have none of those, she said,
speaking grammatically as her governess had taught her.
I am just a woman, or a girl, or whatever that is, doing whatever it is she should not do. Let's do it again, please. Now I am in the lee.
Where is the island now, and in what river?
You are making the discovery. I am only the unknown country.
Not too unknown, the colonel said.
Please don't be rude, the girl said. And please attack gently and with the same attack as before.
It's no attack, the colonel said. It is something else.
Whatever it is, while I'm still in the lee.
Yes. The colonel said, yes, now, if you want, or will accept from kindness.
Please, yes.
She talks like a gentle cat, though the poor cats cannot speak, the colonel thought. But then he stopped thinking, and he did not think for a long time. The gondola now was in one of the secondary canals. When it had turned from the Grand Canal, the wind had swung it so the gondoliere had to shift all his weight as ballast, and the colonel and the girl had shifted too, under the blanket, with the wind getting under the edge of the blanket, wildly. They had not spoken for a long time, and the colonel had noted that the gondola had only inches free in passing under the last bridge. How are you, daughter?
I am quite lovely.
Do you love me?
Please don't ask such silly things.
The tide is very high, and we only just made that last bridge.
I think I know where we are going. I was born here.
I've made mistakes in my hometown, the colonel said. Being born there isn't everything.
It is very much, the girl said. You know that. Please hold me very tightly so we can be a part of each other for a little while.
We can try, the colonel said.
Couldn't I be you?
That's awfully complicated. We could try, of course.
I'm you now, she said, and I just took the city of Paris.
Jesus, daughter, he said. You've got an awful lot of problems on your hands. The next thing, they will parade the 28th Division through.
I don't care.
I do.
Were they not good?
Sure, they had fine commanders, too. But they were National Guard and hard luck. What you call a TS division. Get your TS slip from the chaplain.
I understand none of those things.
They aren't worth explaining, the colonel said.
Will you tell me some true things about Paris? I love it so much, and when I think of you taking it then, it is as though I were riding in this gondola with Marechal Ney.
A no good job, the colonel said. Anyway, not after he fought all those rear guard actions coming back from that big Russian town. He used to fight 10, 12, 15 times a day, maybe more. Afterwards, he couldn't recognize people. Please don't get in any gondolas with him.
He was always one of my great heroes.
Yeah, mine too, until Cat Bras. Maybe it wasn't Cat Bras. I'm getting rusty. Give it the generic title of Waterloo.
Was he bad there?
Awful, the colonel told her. Forget it. Too many rear guard actions coming back from Moskva.
But they call him the bravest of the brave.
You can't eat on that. You have to be that always, and then be the smartest of the smart. Then you need a lot of stuff coming up.
Tell me about Paris, please. We should not make more love, I know.
I don't know it. Who says it?
I say it because I love you.
All right, you said it and you love me. So we act on that. The hell with it.
Do you think we could once more if it would not hurt you?
Hurt me, the colonel said. When the hell was I ever hurt? The gondola now was in one of the secondary canals. When it had turned from the Grand Canal, the wind had swung it so the gondolieri had to shift all his weight as ballast, and the colonel and the girl had shifted too, under the blanket, with the wind getting under the edge of the blanket, wildly. They had not spoken for a long time, and the colonel had noted that the gondola had only inches free in passing under the last bridge. How are you, daughter?
I am quite lovely.
Do you love me?
Please don't ask such silly things.
The tide is very high, and we only just made that last bridge.
I think I know where we are going. I was born here.
I've made mistakes in my hometown, the colonel said. Being born there isn't everything.
It is very much, the girl said. You know that. Please hold me very tightly so we can be a part of each other for a little while.
We can try, the colonel said.
Couldn't I be you?
That's awfully complicated. We could try, of course.
I'm you now, she said, and I just took the city of Paris.
Jesus, daughter, he said. You've got an awful lot of problems on your hands. The next thing, they will parade the 28th Division through.
I don't care.
I do.
Were they not good?
Sure, they had fine commanders, too. But they were National Guard and hard luck. What you call a TS division. Get your TS slip from the chaplain.
I understand none of those things.
They aren't worth explaining, the colonel said.
Will you tell me some true things about Paris? I love it so much, and when I think of you taking it then, it is as though I were riding in this gondola with Marechal Ney.
A no good job, the colonel said. Anyway, not after he fought all those rear guard actions coming back from that big Russian town. He used to fight 10, 12, 15 times a day, maybe more. Afterwards, he couldn't recognize people.
Please don't get in any gondolas with him.
He was always one of my great heroes.
Yeah, mine too, until Cat Bra. Maybe it wasn't Cat Bra. I'm getting rusty. Give it the generic title of Waterloo.
Was he bad there?
Awful, the colonel told her. Forget it. Too many rearguard actions coming back from Moskva.
But they called him the bravest of the brave.
You can't eat on that. You have to be that always, and then be the smartest of the smart. Then you need a lot of stuff coming up.
Tell me about Paris, please. We should not make more love, I know.
I don't know it. Who says it?
I say it because I love you.
All right, you said it and you love me. So we act on that. The hell with it.
Do you think we could once more if it would not hurt you?
Hurt me, the colonel said. When the hell was I ever hurt? 14.
Please don't be bad, she said, pulling the blanket over them both. Please drink a glass of this with me. You know you've been hurt.
Exactly, the colonel said. Let's forget it.
All right, she said. I learned that word or those two words from you. We have forgotten it.
Why do you like the hand? The colonel asked, placing it where he should.
Please don't pretend to be stupid. And please let's not think of anything or anything or anything.
I am stupid, the colonel said, but I won't think of anything or anything, nor of nothing, nor of his brother tomorrow.
Please be good and kind.
I will be. And I will tell you now a military secret. Top secret equals British most secret. I love you.
That's nice, she said, and you put it nicely.
I'm nice, the colonel said, and checked on the bridge that was coming up and saw there was clearance. That's the first thing people notice about me.
I always use the wrong words, the girl said. Please just love me. I wish it was me who could love you.
You do?
Yes, I do, she said, with all my heart.
They were going with the wind now, and they were both tired.
Do you think?
I don't think, the girl said.
Well, try and think.
I will.
Drink a glass of this.
Why not? It's very good.
It was. There was still ice in the bucket, and the wine was cold and clear.
Can I stay at the Gritti?
No.
Why not?
It wouldn't be right. For them, nor you. The hell with me.
Then I suppose I should go home.
Yes, the colonel said. That is the logical supposition.
That is an awful way to say a sad thing. Can't we even pretend some things?
No. I'll take you home and you sleep good and well, and tomorrow we will meet where and when you say.
May I call the Gritti?
Of course. I'll always be awake. Will you call when you are awake?
Yes. But why do you always wake so early?
It's a business habit.
Ah, I wish you were not in that business, and that you were not going to die.
So do I, said the colonel. But I'm getting out of the business.
Yes,
she said, sleepily and comfortably.
Then we go to Rome and get the clothes.
And live happily ever after.
Please don't, she said. Please, please don't. You know I made the resolution not to cry.
You're crying now, the colonel said. What the hell have you got to lose on that resolution?
Take me home, please.
That's what I was doing in the first place, the colonel told her.
Be kind once first.
I will, the colonel said. After they, or the colonel rather, had paid the gondolieri, who was unknowing, yet knowing all, solid, sound, respectful, and trustworthy, they walked into the piazzetta and then across the great, cold, windswept square that was hard and old under their feet. They walked holding close and hard in their sorrow and their happiness.
This is the place where the German shot the pigeons,
the girl said. We probably killed him, the colonel said. Or his brother. Maybe we hanged him. I wouldn't know. I'm not in CID.
Do you love me still on these water-worn, cold, and old stones?
Yes. I'd like to spread a bedroll here and prove it.
That would be more barbarous than the pigeon shooter.
I'm barbarous, the colonel said.
Not always.
Thank you for the not always.
We turn here.
I think I know that. When are they going to tear that damned cinema palace down and put up a real cathedral? That's what T5 Jackson wants.
When someone brings St. Mark back another time under a load of pork from Alexandria.
That was a Torcello boy.
You're a Torcello boy.
Yes, I'm a Passo Piave boy and a Grappa boy straight here from Pertica. I'm a Posubio boy, too, if you know what that means. It was worse just to live there than to fight anywhere else. In the platoon, they used to share anyone's Gonacacci brought from Schio and carried in a matchbox. They used to share this just so they could leave because it was intolerable.
But you stayed.
Sure, the colonel said. I'm always the last man to leave the party. Fiesta, I mean. Not as in political party. The truly unpopular guest.
Should we go?
I thought you'd made up your mind.
I had, but when you said it about unpopular guest, it was unmade.
Keep it made up.
I can hold a decision.
I know, you can hold any damn thing. But, daughter, sometimes you don't just hold. That is for stupids. Sometimes you have to switch fast.
I'll switch if you like.
No, I think the decision was sound.
But won't it be an awfully long time until morning?
That all depends on whether one has luck or not.
I should sleep well.
Yes, the colonel said. At your age, if you can't sleep, they ought to take you out and hang you.
Oh, please.
Sorry, he said. I meant shoot you.
We are nearly home, and you could be kind now if you wanted.
I'm so kind I stink. Let somebody else be kind. They were in front of the palace now, and there it was, the palace. There was nothing to do now but pull the bell cord or enter with the key. I've been lost in this place, the colonel thought, and I was never lost in my life.
Please kiss me goodnight, kindly.
The colonel did, and loved her so he could not bear it. She opened the door with the key, which was in her bag. Then she was gone, and the colonel was alone, with the worn pavement, the wind which still held in the north, and the shadows from where a light went on. He walked home. Only tourists and lovers take gondolas, he thought, except across the canal in the places where there are no bridges. I ought to go to Harry's, probably, or some damn place. But I think I'll go home. 15. It was really home, if a hotel room can be so described. His pajamas were laid on the bed. There was a bottle of Valpolicella by the reading light, and by the bed a bottle of mineral water in an ice bucket with a glass beside it on the silver tray. The portrait had been deframed and was placed on two chairs where he could see it from the bed. The Paris edition of the New York Herald Tribune lay on the bed beside his three pillows. He used three pillows, as Arnaldo knew, and his extra bottle of medicine, not the one that he carried in his pocket, was beside the reading light. The inner doors of the armoire, the mirrored ones, were opened in such a way that he could see the portrait from the side. His scuffed slippers were by the bed. I'll buy it, the colonel said to himself, since there was no one else there except the portrait. He opened the Valpolicella, which had been uncorked and then recorked carefully, precisely, and lovingly, and poured himself a glass, into the glass which was much better than any hotel should use which was faced with breakage. Here's to you, daughter, he said, you beauty and lovely. Do you know that among other things you smell good always? You smell wonderfully, even in a high wind or under a blanket or kissing goodnight. You know, almost no one does, and you don't use scent. She looked at him from the portrait and said nothing. The hell with it, he said. I'm not going to talk to a picture. What do you think went wrong tonight, he thought. Me, I guess. Well, I will try to be a good boy tomorrow all day, starting at first light. Daughter, he said, and he was talking to her and not to a picture now. Please know I love you and that I wish to be delicate and good, and please stay with me always now. The picture was the same. The colonel took out the emeralds from his pocket and looked at them, feeling them slide, cold and yet warm, as they take warmth, and as all good stones have warmth, from his bad hand into his good hand. I should have put these in an envelope and locked them up, he thought. But what the effing security is there better than I can give them? I have to get these back to you fast, daughter. It was fun, though. And they're not worth more than a quarter of a million. What I would make in 400 years. Have to check that figure. He put the stones in the pocket of his pajamas and put a handkerchief over them. Then he buttoned the pocket. The first sound thing you learn, he thought, is to have flaps and buttons on all your pockets. I imagine that I learned it too early. The stones felt good. They were hard and warm against his flat, hard, old, and warm chest, and he noted how the wind was blowing, looked at the portrait, poured another glass of Valpolicella, and then started to read the Paris edition of the New York Herald Tribune. I ought to take the pills, he thought. But the hell with the pills. Then he took them just the same and went on reading the New York Herald. He was reading Red Smith, and he liked him very much. 16. The colonel woke before daylight and checked that there was no one sleeping with him. The wind was still blowing hard, and he went to the open windows to check the weather. There was no light as yet in the east across the Grand Canal, but his eyes could see how rough the water was. Be a hell of a tide today, he thought. Probably flood the square. That's always fun, except for the pigeons. He went to the bathroom, taking the Herald Tribune and Red Smith with him, as well as a glass of Valpolicella. Damn, I'll be glad when the Grand Maestro gets those big fiascos, he thought. This wine gets awfully dreggy at the end. He sat there with his newspaper, thinking of the things of that day. There would be the telephone call, but it might be very late because she would be sleeping late. The young sleep late, he thought, and the beautiful sleep half again as late. She certainly would not call early, and the shops did not open until 9 or a little later. Hell, he thought, I have these damned stones. How could anyone do a thing like that? You know how, he said to himself, reading the ads in the back of the paper. You've put it on the line enough times. It isn't crazy or morbid. She just wanted to put it on the line. It was a good thing it was me, he thought. That is the only good thing about being me, he considered. Well, I'm me, goddammit, for better or for much worse. How would you like to sit on the can as you have sat almost every morning of your damned life with this in your pocket? He was addressing no one except, perhaps, posterity. How many mornings have you sat in the row with all the others? That's the worst of it. That and shaving. Or you go off to be alone and think or not think and pick a good piece of cover, and there are two riflemen there already or some boy asleep. There's no more privacy in the army than a professional shithouse. I've never been in a professional shithouse, but I imagine they run it much the same. I could learn to run one, he thought. Then I'd make all my leading shithouse characters ambassadors, and the unsuccessful ones could be corps commanders or command military districts in peacetime. Don't be bitter, boy, he said to himself. It's too early in the morning and your duty's not completed yet. What would you do with their wives, he asked himself. Buy them new hats or shoot them, he said. It's all part of the same process. He looked at himself in the mirror set in the half-closed door. It showed him at a slight angle. That's a deflection shot, he said to himself, and they didn't lead me enough. Boy, he said, you certainly are a beat-up, old-looking bastard. Now you have to shave and look at that face while you do it. Then you must get a haircut. That's easy in this town. You're a colonel of infantry, boy. You can't go around looking like Joan of Arc or General Brevetted George Armstrong Custer, that beautiful horse cavalryman. I guess it is fun to be that way and have a loving wife and use sawdust for brains. But it must have seemed like the wrong career to him when they finished up on that hill above the Little Bighorn, with the ponies making the circle around them and all the dust, and the sagebrush crushed by the hooves of the horses of the other people, and nothing left to him for the rest of his life but that old, lovely black powder smell, and his own people shooting each other and themselves because they were afraid of what the squaws would do to them. The body was unspeakably mutilated, they used to put in this same paper. And on that hill to know you'd made one real mistake finally and for good and complete with true handles. Poor horse cavalryman, he thought. The end of all his dreams. That's one good thing about being an infantryman. You never have any dreams except bad dreams. Well, he said to himself, we're finished here, and pretty soon there will be good light and I can see the portrait. I'll be damned if I'll turn that in. I keep that. Oh, Christ, he said. I wonder what she looks like now, sleeping. I know how she looks, he said to himself. Wonderful. She sleeps as though she had not gone to sleep, as though she were just resting. I hope she is, he thought. I hope she's resting well. Christ Jesus, how I love her, and I hope I never do her harm. 17. When it started to be light, the colonel saw the portrait. He very probably saw it as quickly as any man who was civilized and had to read and sign the forms he did not believe in could see an object as soon as it was visible. Yes, he said to himself. I have eyes and they have fairly fast perception still, and once they had ambition. I have led my ruffians where they were well peppered. There are but 3 of the 250 of them left alive, and they are for the town's end to beg during life. That's from Shakespeare, he told the portrait, winner and still undisputed champion. Someone might take him in a short bout, but I would rather revere him. Did you ever read King Lear, daughter? Mr. Gene Tunney did, and he was the champion of the world. But I read it too. Soldiers care for Mr. Shakespeare too, though it may seem impossible. He writes like a soldier himself. You have anything to say in your defense except to put your head back? He asked the portrait. You want some more Shakespeare? You don't have to defend. You just rest and leave it as it is. It's no good. Your defense and my defense is no damn good. But who could tell you to go out and hang yourself the way we do? Nobody, he said to himself and to the portrait. And certainly not me. He put his good hand down and found that the room waiter had left a second bottle of Valpolicella alongside of where the first had been. If you love a country, the colonel thought, you might as well admit it. Sure, admit it, boy. I have loved 3 and lost them 3. Give a credit. We've retook 2. Retaken, he corrected. And we will retake the other one. General Fat-Ass Franco on his shooting stick with the advice of his doctor and tame ducks and a screen of Moorish cavalry when he shoots. Yes, he said softly to the girl who looked at him clearly now in the first and best light. We will retake and they will all be hung upside down outside of filling stations. You have been warned, he added. Portrait, he said. Why the hell can't you just get into bed with me instead of being 18 solid stone blocks away? Maybe more. I'm not as sharp now as I was. Whenever. Portrait, he said to the girl, and to the portrait, and to the girl both. But there wasn't any girl, and the portrait was as it was painted. Portrait, keep your goddamn chin up so you can break my heart easier. That certainly was a lovely present. The colonel thought. Can you maneuver? He asked the portrait. Good and fast? Portrait said nothing, and the colonel answered, You know damn well she can. She'd outmaneuver you the best day you were ever born, and she would stay and fight where you would F off discreetly. portrait, he said. Boy or daughter or my one true love or whatever it is. You know what it is, portrait. The portrait, as before, did not answer. But the colonel, who was a general now again, early in the morning at the only time he really knew, and with Valpolicella, knew as absolutely as though he had just read his third Wasserman that there was no F-off in portrait, and he felt shame for having talked to portrait roughly. I'll be the best goddamn boy you ever witnessed today, and you can tell your principal that. Portrait, as was her fashion, was silent. She probably would speak to a horse cavalryman, the general, for now he had 2 stars, and they grated on his shoulders and showed white in the vague scuffed red on the plaque in front of his jeep. He never used command cars nor semi-armored vehicles complete with sandbags. The hell with your portrait, he said. Or get your TS slip from the universal chaplain of us all with combined religions. You ought to be able to eat on that.
The hell with you, the portrait said without speaking. You low-class soldier.
Yes, the colonel said, for now he was a colonel again and had relinquished all his former rank. I love you, portrait, very much, but don't get rough with me. I love you very much because you're beautiful. But I love the girl better, 1,000,000 times better, hear it? There was no sign that she heard it, so he tired of it. You are in a fixed position, portrait, he said, without or with any frame, and I am going to maneuver. The portrait was as silent as she had been since the concierge had brought her into the room, and, aided and abetted by the second waiter, had shown her to the colonel and to the girl. The colonel looked at her and saw she was indefensible now that the light was good, or almost good. He saw, too, that she was the portrait of his own true love, and so he said, I'm sorry for all the stupidnesses I say. I do not wish ever to be brutal. Maybe we could both sleep a little while, with luck, and then perhaps your mistress would call on the telephone. Maybe she will even call, he thought. 18. The hall porter pushed the gazettino under the door. The colonel had it, noiselessly, almost as soon as it had passed through the slit. He very nearly took it from the hall porter's hand. He did not like the hall porter, since he had found him one day going through his bag when he, the colonel, had re-entered the room after having left it, presumably for some time. He had to come back to the room to get his bottle of the medicine, which he had forgotten, and the hall porter was well through his bag. I guess you don't say stick them up in this hotel, the colonel had said. But you're no credit to your town. There was silence produced and reproduced by the striped, waistcoated man with the fascist face, and the colonel said, Go on, boy, look through the rest of it. I don't carry any military secrets with my toilet articles. Since then, there was scant friendship between them, and the colonel enjoyed trying to take the morning paper from the striped, waistcoated man's hand noiselessly, and when he heard or saw it first make a move under the door. Okay, you won today, jerk, he said in his best Venetian dialect he could summon at that hour. Go hang yourself. But they don't hang themselves, he thought. They just have to go on putting papers under other people's doors that do not even hate them. Must be quite a difficult trade being an ex-fascist. Maybe he's not an ex-fascist, too. How do you know? I can't hate fascists, he thought, nor Krauts either, since, unfortunately, I am a soldier. Listen, portrait, he said. Do I have to hate the Krauts because we killed them? Do I have to hate them as soldiers and as human beings? Seems too easy a solution to me. Well, portrait, forget it. Forget it. You're not old enough to know about it. You are 2 years younger than the girl that you portray, and she is younger and older than hell, which is quite an old place. Listen, portrait, he said, and saying it, knew that now, as long as he lived, he would have someone to talk to at the early hours that he woke. As I was saying, portrait, the hell with that, too. That's too old for you, too. That is one of the things you can't say, no matter how true it is. There are lots of things I can never say to you, and maybe that will be good for me. It's about time something was. What do you think would be good for me, Portrait? What's the matter, Portrait? He asked her. You getting hungry? I am. So he rang the bell for the waiter who would bring breakfast. He knew that now, even though the light was so good that every wave showed on the Grand Canal, lead-colored and solid, heavy with the wind, and the tide now high over the landing steps of the palace directly opposite his room, there would be no telephone call for several hours. The young sleep good, he thought. They deserve it. Why do we have to get old? He asked the waiter who had come in with his glass eye and the menu.
I don't know, my colonel. I suppose it is a natural process.
Yes, I guess I imagine that too. The eggs fried with their faces up. Tea and toast.
You don't want anything American?
The hell with anything American except me. Is the Grand Maestro astir yet?
He has your Valpolicella in the big wicker fiascos of 2 liters, and I have brought this decanter with it.
That one, the colonel said. I wish to Christ I could give him a regiment.
I don't think he would want one, really.
No, the colonel said. I don't want one, really, myself. 19. The colonel breakfasted with the leisure of a fighter who has been clipped badly, hears four, and knows how to relax truly for 5 seconds more. Portrait, he said, you ought to relax too. That's the only thing that is going to be difficult about you. That's what they call the static element in painting. You know, Portrait, that almost no pictures, paintings, rather, move at all. A few do, but not many. I wish that your mistress was here and we could have movement. How do girls like you and she know so much, so damn young, and be so beautiful? With us, if a girl is really beautiful, she comes from Texas, and maybe, with luck, she can tell you what month it is. They can all count good, though. They teach them how to count and keep their legs together, and how to put their hair up in pin curls. Sometime, Portrait, for your sins, if you have any, you ought to have to sleep in a bed with a girl who has put her hair up in pin curls to be beautiful tomorrow. Not tonight. They'd never be beautiful tonight. For tomorrow, when we make the competition. The girl, Renata, that you are, is sleeping now without ever having done anything to her hair. She is sleeping with it spread out on the pillow, and all it is to her is a glorious, dark, silky annoyance that she can hardly remember to comb except that her governess taught her. I see her in the street with a lovely long-legged stride and the wind doing anything it wants to her hair and her true breasts under the sweater. And then I see the knights in Texas with the pin curls, tight and subjected by metallic instruments. Pin me no pin curls, my beloved, he said to the portrait, and I will try to lay it on the line in round, heavy, hard silver dollars or with the other. I mustn't get rough, he thought. Then he said to the portrait, for he did not capitalize her now in his mind, you are so goddamned beautiful you stink. Also, you are jailbait. Renata's 2 years older now. You are under 17. And why can't I have her and love her and cherish her and never be rude nor bad and have the 5 sons that go to the 5 corners of the world, wherever that is? I don't know. I guess the cards we draw are those we get. You wouldn't like to re-deal, would you, dealer? No, they only deal to you once, and then you pick them up and play them. I can play them if I draw any damn thing at all, he told Portrait, who was unimpressed. Portrait, he said, you better look the other way so that you will not be unmaidenly. I'm going to take a shower now and shave, something you will never have to do, and put on my soldier suit and go and walk around this town, even though it is too early. So he got out of bed, favoring his bad leg, which hurt him always. He pulled the reading light with his bad hand. There was sufficient light, and he had been wasting electricity for nearly an hour.
He regretted this as he regretted all his errors. He walked past Portrait, only looking casually, and looked at himself in the mirror. He had dropped both parts of his pajamas, and he looked at himself critically and truly.
"You beat-up old bastard," he said to the mirror.
Portrait was a thing of the past. Mirror was actuality and of this day. "The gut is flat," he said without uttering it. "The chest is all right except where it contains the defective muscle. We are hung as we are hung, for better or worse or something awful. You are 100 years old, you bastard, you. Now go in and take a shower and scrub good, and afterwards put on your soldier suit. Today is another day." 20. The colonel stopped at the reception desk in the lobby, but the concierge was not there yet. There was only the night porter. "Can you put something in the safe for me?"
No, Mac Colonel. No one may open the safe until the assistant manager or the concierge arrives. But I will guard anything for you that you wish.
Thank you. It's not worth the trouble. And he buttoned the greedy envelope with the stones inside, the envelope addressed to himself, into the inside left pocket of his tunic.
There's no real crime here now.
It had been a long night, and he was happy to speak to someone.
There never really was, Mac Colonel. There are only differences of opinion and politics.
What do you have for politics? The colonel asked, for he was lonely too.
About what you would expect.
I see. And how is your thing going?
I think it goes quite well. Maybe not as well as last year, but still quite well. We were beaten, and we have to wait a while now.
Do you work at it?
Not much. It is more the politics of my heart than of my head. I believe in it with my head, too, but I have very little political development.
When you get it, you won't have any heart.
Maybe not. Do you have politics in the army?
Plenty, the colonel said, but not what you mean.
Well, we better not discuss it then. I have not meant to be intrusive.
I asked the question, the original question, rather. It was only to talk. It was not an interrogation.
I don't think it was. You do not have the face of an inquisitor, my colonel, and I know about the order, although I am not a member.
You may be member material. I'll take it up with the Grand Maestro.
We come from the same town, but from distinct quarters.
It's a good town.
My colonel, I have so little political development that I believe all honorable men are honorable.
Oh, you'll get over that, the colonel assured him. Don't worry, boy. You've got a young party. Naturally, you make errors.
Please don't talk like that.
It was just rough early morning joking.
Tell me, my colonel, what do you really think about Tito?
I think several things, but he's my next-door neighbor. I found it better not to talk about my neighbor.
I'd like to learn.
Then learn it the hard way. Don't you know people don't give answers to such questions?
I had hoped they did.
They don't, the colonel said. Not in my position. All I can tell you is that Mr. Tito has plenty problems.
Well, I know that now truly,
the night porter, who was really only a boy, said. I hope you do, the colonel said. I wouldn't call it as knowledge any pearl of great price. Now, good day. For I must take a walk for the good of my liver or something.
Good day, my colonel. Fa brutto tempo.
Bruttissimo, the colonel said, and pulling the belt of his raincoat tight and settling his shoulders into it and the skirts well down, he stepped out into the wind. 21. The colonel took the 10 centesimi gondola across the canal, paying the usual dirty note and standing with the crowd of those condemned to early rising. He looked back at the greedy and saw the windows of his room still open. There was no promise nor threat of rain, only the same strong, wild, cold wind from the mountains. Everyone in the gondola looked cold, and the colonel thought, I wish I could issue these windproof coats to everyone on board. God and every officer that ever wore one knows they are not waterproof. And who made the money out of that one?
You can't get water through a Burberry. But I suppose some able jerk has his boy in Groton now, or maybe Canterbury, where the big contractor's boys go, because our coats leaked. And what about some brother officer of mine who's split with them? I wonder who the Benny Myers of the ground forces were. There probably wasn't only one. Probably, he thought, there must be very many. He must not be awake yet to talk that simply. They do keep the wind out, though, the raincoats. Raincoats, my ass. The gondola pulled up between the stakes on the far bank of the canal, and the colonel watched the black-clad people climb up out of the black-painted vehicle. Is she a vehicle, he thought, or must a vehicle have wheels or be tracked? Nobody would give you a penny for your thoughts, he thought. Not this morning. But I've seen them worth a certain amount of money when the chips were down. He penetrated into the far side of the city, the side that finally fronted on the Adriatic and that he liked the best. He was going in by a very narrow street, and he was going to not keep track of the number of more or less north and south streets that he crossed, nor count the bridges and then try and orient himself so he would come out at the market without getting up any dead ends. It was a game you play, as some people used to play Devil Canfield or any solitary card games, but it had the advantage of you moving while you do it, and that you look at the houses, the minor vistas, the shops and the trattorias, and at old palaces of the city of Venice while you were walking. If you loved the city of Venice, it was an excellent game. It is a sort of solitaire ambulance, and what you win is the happiness of your eye and heart. If you made the market on this side of town without ever being stymied, you won the game. But you must not make it too easy, and you must not count. On the other side of the town, game was to leave from the Gritti and make the Rialto by the Fondamenti Nuove without a mistake. Then you could climb the bridge and cross it and go down into the market. He liked the market best. It was the part of any town he always went to first. Just then, he heard the two young men behind him saying the things about him. He knew they were young men by their voices, and he did not look back, but listened carefully for distance and waited for the next turn to see them as he turned. They're on their way to work, he decided. Maybe they're a former fascist, or maybe they're something else. Or maybe it is just the line that they are talking, but they are making it pretty personal now. It isn't just Americans, it is also me. Myself, my gray hair, the slightly crooked way I walk, the combat boots, those of that stripe disliked the practicability of combat boots. They liked boots that rang on the flagstones and took a high black polish. It is my uniform which they find to be without grace. Now it is why I am walking at this hour, and now it is their absolute security that I can no longer make love. The colonel swung sharp to the left at the next corner, seeing what he had to deal with and the exact distance, and when the two young men came around the corner, which was formed by the apse of the church of Frari, there was no colonel. He was in the dead angle behind the apse of the ancient church, and as they passed, he, hearing them come by their talk, stepped out with a hand in each low pocket of his raincoat and turned himself and the raincoat with the two hands in the pockets toward them. They stopped, and he looked at them both in the face and smiled his old and worn death smile. Then he looked down at their feet as you always look at the feet of such people, since they wear their shoes too tight, and when you take the shoes off them you see their hammer toes. The colonel spat on the pavement and said nothing. The two of them, they were the first thing that he had suspected, looked at him with hatred and with that other thing. Then they were off like marsh birds, walking with the long strides of herons, too, the colonel thought, and something of the flight of curlews, and looking back with hatred, waiting to have the last word if the distance was ever safe. It is a pity they weren't 10 against 1, the colonel thought. They might have fought. I should not blame them since they were defeated. But their manners were not good in respect to a man of my rank and age. Also, it was not intelligent to think all 50-year-old colonels would not understand their language. Nor was it intelligent to think old infantrymen would not fight this early in the morning against the simple odds of 2-1. I'd hate to fight in this town where I love the people. I would avoid it. But couldn't those badly educated youths realize what sort of animal they were dealing with? Don't they know how you get to walk that way? Nor any of the other signs that combat people show, as surely as a fisherman's hands tell you if he is a fisherman from the creases from the cord cuts. It is true they only saw my back and ass and legs and boots, but you'd think they might have told from the way they must move. Maybe they don't anymore, but when I had the chance to look at them and think, take the two of them out and hang them, I believe they understood. They understood quite clearly. What's a man's life worth, anyway? $10,000 if his insurance is paid up in our army. What the hell has that got to do with it? Oh, yes, that was what I was thinking about before those jerks showed. How much money I had saved my government in my time when people like Benny Myers were in the trough. Yes, he said. And how much you lost them at the chateau that time at 10 G's a head. Well, nobody ever really understood it except me, I guess. There's no reason to tell them now. Your commanding general sometimes puts things down as the fortunes of war. Back at army, they know such things are bound to happen. You do it as ordered with a big butcher bill, and you're a hero. Christ, I'm opposed to the excessive butcher bill, he thought. But you get the orders and you have to carry them out. It is the mistakes that are no good to sleep with. But why the hell sleep with them anyway? It never did any good. But they can certainly crawl into a sack sometimes. They can crawl in and stay in there with you. Cheer up, boy, he said. Remember you had a lot of money on you when you picked that one. And you might have been stripped if you lost. You can't fight a lick anymore with your hands, and you didn't have any weapon. So don't be gloomy, boy, or man, or colonel, or busted general. We're almost to the market now, and you made it without hardly noticing. Hardly noticing is bad, he added. 22. He loved the market. A great part of it was close-packed and crowded into several side streets, and it was so concentrated that it was difficult not to jostle people unintentionally, and each time you stopped to look, to buy, or to admire, you formed an îlot de résistance against the flow of the morning attack of the purchasers. The colonel liked to study the spread and high-piled cheeses and the great sausages. People at home think mortadella is a sausage, he thought. Then he said to the woman in the booth, "Let me try a little of that sausage, please. Only a sliver." She cut a thin, paper-thin slice for him, ferociously and lovingly, and when the colonel tasted it, there was the half-smoky, black peppercorn true flavor of the meat from the hogs that ate acorns in the mountains. "I will take a quarter of a kilo." The Baron's lunches for the shooting blinds were of a Spartan quality, which the colonel respected since he knew no one should eat much while shooting. He felt, though, that he might augment the lunch with this sausage and share it with the polar and picker-upper. He might give a slice to Bobby, the retriever, who would be wet through to his hide many times and enthusiastic still but shaking with cold. "Is this the best sausage that you have?" he asked the woman. "Have you nothing that does not show and is reserved for better and steadier customers?"
"This is the best sausage. There are many other sausages, as you know, but this is the best."
"Then give me 1/8 of a kilo of a sausage that is highly fortifying but is not highly seasoned."
"I have it," she said. "It is a little new, but exactly as you describe."
This sausage was for Bobby. "But you do not say that you buy sausages for a dog in Italy, where the worst crime is to be considered a fool, and many people go hungry. You may give expensive sausage to a dog before a man who works for his living and knows what a dog goes through in water and cold weather, but you do not buy them stating your purpose in possessing them, unless you are a fool or a millionaire from the war and from after." The colonel paid for the wrapped-up package and proceeded on through the market, inhaling the smell of roasted coffee and looking at the amount of fat on each carcass in the butcher section, as though he were enjoying the Dutch painters, whose names no one remembers, who painted in perfection of detail all things you shot or that were eatable. A market is the closest thing to a good museum like the Prado or as the Academia is now, the colonel thought. He took a shortcut and was at the fish market. In the market, spread on the slippery stone floor or in their baskets or their rope-handled boxes, were the heavy gray-green lobsters with their magenta overtones that presaged their death in boiling water. They've all been captured by treachery, the colonel thought, and their claws are pegged. There were the small soles, and there were a few albacore and bonito. These last, the colonel thought, looked like boat-tailed bullets, dignified in death, and with the huge eye of the pelagic fish. They were not made to be caught, except for their voraciousness. The poor soul exists in shallow water to feed man. But these other roving bullets in their great bands live in blue water and travel through all oceans and all seas. A nickel for your thoughts now, he thought. Let's see what else they have. There were many eels, alive and no longer confident in their eeldom. There were fine prawns that could make a scampi brochetto, spitted and broiled on a rapier-like instrument that could be used as a Brooklyn ice pick. There were medium-sized shrimp, gray and opalescent, awaiting their turn too for the boiling water and their immortality, to have their shucked carcasses float out easily on an ebb tide on the Grand Canal. The speedy shrimp, the colonel thought, with tentacles longer than the mustaches of that old Japanese admiral, comes here now to die for our benefit. O Christian shrimp, he thought, master of retreat. And with your wonderful intelligence service and those two light whips, why did they not teach you about nets and that lights are dangerous? Must have been some slip-up, he thought. Now he looked at the many small crustaceans, the razor-edge clams you only should eat raw if you had your typhoid shots up to date, and all the small delectables. He went past these, stopping to ask one seller where his clams came from. They came from a good place, without sewerage, and the colonel asked to have six opened. He drank the juice and cut the clam out, cutting close against the shell with the curved knife the man handed him. The man had handed him the knife because he knew from experience the colonel cut closer to the shell than he had been taught to cut. The colonel paid him the pittance that they cost, which must have been much greater than the pittance those received who caught them, and he thought, now I must see the stream and canal fishes and get back to the hotel. 23. The colonel arrived at the lobby of the Hotel Gritti Palace. His gondolieres were paid off, and now, inside the hotel, there was no wind. It had taken two men to bring the gondola up the Grand Canal from the market. They had both worked hard, and he had paid them what it is worth and some more. "Are there any calls for me?" he asked the concierge, who was now in attendance. The concierge was light, fast, sharp-faced, intelligent, and polite, always, without subservience. He wore the crossed keys of his office on the lapels of his blue uniform without ostentation. He was the concierge. It is a rank very close to that of captain, the colonel thought. An officer and not a gentleman. Make it top sergeant in the old days, except he's dealing always with the brass. "My lady has called twice," the concierge said in English, or whatever that language should be called we all speak, the colonel thought. Leave it at English. That is about what they have left. They should be allowed to keep the name of the language. Cripps will probably ration it shortly anyway. "Please put me through to her at once," he told the concierge. The concierge commenced to dial numbers. "You may talk over there, my colonel," he said. "I have made the connection." "You're fast." "Over there," the concierge said. Inside the booth, the colonel lifted the receiver and said automatically, "Colonel Cantwell speaking."
"I called twice, Richard,"
the girl said. But they explained that you were out. Where were you?
At the market.
How are you, my lovely?
No one listens on this phone at this hour. I am your lovely, whoever that is.
You? Did you sleep well?
It was like skiing in the dark. Not really skiing, but really dark.
That's the way it should be. Why did you wake so early? You've frightened my concierge.
If it is not unmaidenly, how soon can we meet and where?
Where you wish and when you wish.
Do you still have the stones, and did Miss Portrait help any?
Yes, to both questions. The stones are in my upper left-hand pocket, buttoned down. Miss Portrait and I talked late and early, and it made everything much easier.
Do you love her more than me?
I'm not abnormal yet. Perhaps that's bragging. But she's lovely.
Where should we meet?
Should we have breakfast at the Florian on the right-hand side of the square? The square should be flooded, and it'll be fun to watch.
I'll be there in 20 minutes if you want me.
I want you, the colonel said, and hung up.
Coming out of the telephone booth, he suddenly did not feel good. And then he felt as though the devil had him in an iron cage, built like an iron lung or an iron maiden, and he walked gray-faced to the concierge's desk and said in Italian,
Domenico, Ico, could you give me a glass of water, please?
The concierge was gone, and he leaned on the desk, resting. He rested lightly and without illusion. Then the concierge was back with the glass of water, and he took 4 tablets of the type that you take 2, and he continued resting as lightly as a hawk rests.
Domenico, he said.
Yes.
I have something here in an envelope that you can put in the safe. It may be called for either by myself in person or in writing, or by the person you have just put that call through to. Would you like that in writing?
No, it would be unnecessary.
But what about you, boy? You're not immortal, are you?
Fairly so, the concierge told him. But I will put it in writing, and after me comes the manager and the assistant manager.
Both good men, the colonel agreed.
Wouldn't you like to sit down, my colonel?
No. Who sits down except men and women in change-of-life hotels? Do you sit down?
No.
I can rest on my feet or against a goddamn tree.
My countrymen sit down or lie down or fall down. Give them a few energy crackers to stall their whimpers.
He was talking too much to regain confidence quickly.
Do they really have energy crackers?
Sure. It has something in it that keeps you from getting erections. It's like the atomic bomb only played backwards.
I can't believe it.
We have the most terrific military secrets that one general's wife ever told another. Energy crackers is the least of it. Next time we will give all Venice botulism from 56,000 feet. There's nothing to it, the colonel explained. They give you anthrax, and you give them botulism.
But it will be horrible.
It will be worse than that, the colonel assured him. This isn't classified. It's all been published. And while it goes on, you can hear Margaret, if you tune in right, singing the Star-Spangled Banner on the radio. I think that could be arranged. The voice I would not describe as a big one. Not as we know voices who have heard the good ones in our time. But everything is a trick now. The radio can almost make the voice. And the Star-Spangled Banner is foolproof until toward the last.
Do you think they will drop anything here?
No, I never have.
The colonel, who was 4-star general now in his wrath and in his agony and his need for confidence, but secured temporarily through the absorption of the tablets, said, Ciao, Domenico, and left the greeting. He figured it took 12.5 minutes to reach the place where his true love would probably arrive a little late. He walked it carefully, and at the speed he should walk it. The bridges were all the same. 24. His true love was at the table at the exact time she said she would be. She was as beautiful as always in the hard morning light that came across the flooded square, and she said,
Please, Richard, are you all right? Please.
Sure, the colonel said.
You wonder, beauty.
Did you go to all our places in the market?
Only a few of them. I did not go to where they have the wild ducks.
Thank you.
For nothing, the colonel said. I never go there when we are not together.
Don't you think I should go to the chute?
No, I'm quite sure. Avarito would have asked you if he wanted you.
He might not have asked me because he wanted me.
That's true, the colonel said, and pondered that for 2 seconds. What do you want for breakfast?
Breakfast is worthless here, and I don't like the square when it is flooded. It is sad, and the pigeons have no place to alight. It is only really fun toward the last when the children play. Should we go and have breakfast at the Gritti?
Do you want to?
Yes.
Good, we'll have breakfast there. I've had mine already.
Really?
I'll have some coffee and hot rolls, and only feel them with my fingers. Are you awfully hungry?
Awfully, she said truly.
We'll give breakfast the full treatment, the colonel said. You'll wish you had never heard of breakfast. As they walked, with the wind at their back and her hair blowing better than any banner, she asked him, holding close,
Do you still love me in the cold, hard Venice light of morning? It is really cold and hard, isn't it?
I love you, and it is cold and hard.
I loved you all night when I was skiing in the dark.
How do you do that?
It is the same runs, except that it is dark, and the snow is dark instead of light. You ski the same, controlled and good.
Did you ski all night? That would be many runs.
No, afterwards I slept soundly and well, and I woke happy. You were with me, and you were asleep like a baby.
I wasn't with you, and I was not asleep.
You're with me now, she said, and held close and tight.
And we are almost there.
Yes.
Have I told you yet properly that I love you?
You told me, but tell me again.
I love you, he said. Take it frontally and formally, please.
I'd take it any way you want as long as it is true.
That's the proper attitude, he said. You good, brave, lovely girl. Turn your hair sideways once on top of this bridge and let it blow obliquely. He had made a concession with obliquely instead of saying correctly, oblique.
That's easy, she said. Do you like it?
He looked and saw the profile and the wonderful early morning color and her chest upstanding in the black sweater and her eyes in the wind, and he said, Yes, I like it.
I'm very glad, she said.
This ends Disc 4.